Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
Have accessed entry 671.PS10425, certificate number 23757. Jellyfish blooms.
Ow! Dory, that's a jellyfish!
Bad squishy, bad squishy!
Shoot, damn it!
You and your wife, Mindy, like to travel.
Travel a fair bit.
You like it. You enjoy being together in other places, staying in an Airbnb somewhere or a castle.
Probably not a castle.
Or like
maybe a hotel.
Like a hotel in an old castle. I know you've done that.
That would be nice. I've started to interrogate more and more why we travel. I'm always like, is this bad? Is this just like a distraction from life? You know, do people who travel a lot do so? What are they running away from?
Is it because you got tired of staying in damp Scottish hotels because you bought yourself a damp vacation home on a remote island?
I think it's more that we're traveling enough that I really have to think, like, what does it do to your life when you travel a lot? Do you lose a sense of home and community? Are you able to just not actually finish projects, solve problems, work locally because you're just like, what if we went to the other house for a couple months?
Yeah, I
think there's an income level where people can always just keep going around the world.
Somebody said to me the other day, I was waiting in an office. I think I might have told you about it already, where the receptionist in an office that I was talking to said, stay small. You have to just stay small, stay local. That's how to be happy. And I was like, stay small, stay local. That's the opposite of what I've been doing for 20 years. I've been trying to be all over.
I kind of believe it.
Stay small, stay local. So I walked out of the office like, stay small, stay local. I've been kind of saying it to myself, trying to figure it out.
I mean, part of it is you age out of your, at some point you're going to age out of your adventurer stage of your life.
Really? I thought I was going to have really long white hair and be the type of person you'd meet on a ferry boat in Indonesia somewhere.
It is 1 in 1,000 old people, but most of them are sex tourists, I think.
Oh, right. You're not wrong as I think about the ones I've met.
The guy with the long white hair that you keep meeting in Thailand, why does he go there every summer?
Yeah, that's true.
No. But
what I've noticed about you and Mindy is that you very seldom go to tropical or sunny or really what other people would consider fun and relaxing vacations. You guys go to Inglang and other cold, rainy places that are sort of like this.
We often try to get away from Seattle once during the dark times.
Oh, to a nice place. Yeah. You've been to Maui.
Yeah. For a while, we're going to Maui once a year. We love Maui. We took the kids to Costa Rica, took the kids to Belize. We were talking about Mexico, but we never did it. We've been to like Florida a couple times.
All of our fans who are angry that they can't afford a mortgage are like really angry right now.
Wait, he's been to Disney parks in California and Florida.
But let me tell you, listeners who are mad and feel like this is some Gen X thing, Ken has earned it. Ken and Mindy have earned it from all their suffering.
Not remotely.
Yeah.
Can you imagine somebody who has like out earned any of possible, like any possible merit or suffering more than me?
That's funny. But in your travels, have you encountered jellyfish?
I mean, I've seen them on beaches, and I think when you see them on the beach, they're usually dead. You're usually
jellyfish. I've seen them,
but I have been the one time jellyfish did affect my life. We were snorkeling in Hanauma Bay, like east of Waikiki. I don't know where. It's less than an hour east of
It's a great little snorkeling place.
Little beautiful kind of inlet.
Did you know now that they limit the number of people that can go?
And we had to do some work to get, because we went, I don't know when this was, 5 years ago, but it was definitely a you have to figure out and make a reservation.
That's so funny. When I was a kid, you just drive out there. There was nobody there. Climb in the water and just bob around. And the last time I was in Oahu, I drove by and there was like a gate. This whole system.
They got like a visitor center. White people ruined
everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
But especially Hanauma Bay. Yeah. And we got there after this great travail to figure out what day we could go and make sure we could get in. You drive out there. You got to wait and park and pick your time. And we get down to the beach and they're announcing that there's a what? Portuguese man-o-wars or something. Mm-hmm. Something is in the water that might want to sting you. And as a result, people keep coming out of the waters with big welts on their legs or back or wherever they got stung. And we had a decision to make because, you know, that we're there with two teenage kids. We're like, do we go in the water where there's jellyfish? Because we came all this way to snorkel. And hey, it's first of all, it's definitely beautiful. And you'll probably not get stung.
Sure. One in ten.
Like, it's certain that it's beautiful. It's unlikely that we will get a vacation-ruining sting. And we decided, even though we were watching people come out and limp over to the lifeguard, we decided we would go in and snorkel.
Oh, you did?
And we did. And it was gorgeous, and nobody got stung. And from that day to this, I've had no fear of jellyfish because I know that I am their master.
Yeah, right. They will avoid you at all costs. Apparently, if you pee on a jellyfish sting, it helps.
I've heard that too, but maybe what do they mean by helps? Like it helps the pervert doing it?
I think so. It's the guy with the white hair who's like, want me to pee on it?
Hey, I could pee on that.
He spends all day at the beach.
Sir, this is a...
this is a Wendy's.
Sir, this is a bunion. Stop peeing on my foot.
yeah, the only time I've ever had this is, we just sound like such chodes, but the only time I've encountered jellyfish as a problem that was like a vacation concern was in Uruguay. I was there on the beach in Uruguay walking along with, you know, in my swim trunks, looking for a good spot to hit the water, and it was just jellyfish, like washing up on the shore.
Like you could just see there was no break in the jellyfish?
Oh, yeah. The sea was full of jellyfish, and it wasn't a vacation ruiner. There are a lot of other things to do in Uruguay, but it definitely was, well, we're not swimming in the ocean here.
Because here it was like, I can see all the water. You might see a jellyfish. Whereas there it was like, you could see all the jellyfish.
Yeah.
You can't find open water.
Yeah. And they were jellyfish the size of a loaf of bread or, you know, like a half of a loaf of bread.
Did you know they were stingy ones or would it just be unpleasant to swim with that many jellyfish?
I mean, I think they also were stingy ones, but no, to get in that water would be just super weird. It would just, you're just covered with jellyfish.
It would turn you into a sex tourist.
Yeah, even if, that's right. Even if they weren't stingy, you'd have to have a real,
be unpleasant
like, thing about
no jellyfish. One likes the texture of jellyfish, although that's not true. Many Asian cultures eat jellyfish. They can't get enough of it.
Yeah, jellyfish, you know, like, I mean, there's almost nothing that you can find in the sea that some Asian culture won't have already found a use for.
But the fact that they still do it now that we've sent them spam shows that it's not just like an ancient need, you know, right. Like at some point your taste is like, yeah, I could go for some jellyfish right now.
Well, they don't have much of a taste except salt.
Yeah.
And there's not much to them. They're 95% water. So really they're just a kind of collagen texture.
It's a texture in your salad.
Yeah, but and in China they actually have jellyfish salad.
Yeah.
That's kind of like a vermicelli, they've also been described as like a tendon, a beef tendon that's been cooked for a long time.
But I don't like eating beef tendon either.
No, none of these things are that great. Although more and more.
But that's racist, by the way. Like taco trucks are serving tendon and it's delicious. It's just not my thing.
Of all the things, when I get a bowl of pho, like the one I had last night, and then I go down the list of things I want in my pho, there's a lot more.
Cross off tendon.
Yeah, there's a lot more options than I ever choose. Because I've definitely had it all in there and I've said, nope, that was not for me. That one either. I always get rare beef and meatball. And a lot of people don't like those meatballs because they're too.
Oh, the meatballs are good.
You know, the first time I ever had them, the woman that was serving me pho, I said, meatballs? And she was like, yeah, they're kind of crunchy, kind of spongy, not like your meatballs. And I was like,
a little personal.
Crunchy and spongy. Hmm, I'll try them.
Crunchy.
And then I was like, crunchy and spongy. That's what I was.
She nailed it.
I wish my meatballs were crunchier.
I also poo-poo the, I do not get the tendon for the same reason. It's, yeah. It's not for me.
No, it's just not for me.
There's other more delicious pho things on your pho menu.
And I don't know if my pho restaurant offered me jellyfish noodles, whether, I mean, I'm sure I'd try them once. You got to try everything once. But I don't know if they would be necessarily to my taste. But there's a lot more movement in trying to find uses for jellyfish, because there is a, I think now recently, a global sense that jellyfish are becoming a problem.
They're on the rise?
Well,
warming seas?
So, and I want to preface this, now that we've spent the first 10 minutes of the show talking about all of our luxury vacations, I want to make sure...
The carbon footprint of that has meant...
I want to make sure that you don't also, as a listener, feel like I am a climate change denialist, because, of course, I'm not. But
let me just say, if you and I are going to Uruguay and Costa Rica, those are places people retire because the American healthcare system is so bad.
Yes.
Like, those are nice, inexpensive trips.
Yes, right. And, you know, just because you're not averse to flying 100 times a year...
Get that platinum status, baby.
Doesn't mean that you also don't really care about the planet.
You can do offsets like Al Gore might in his jet, claim to.
You plant a tree every year.
I plant a tree. The first thing I do when I board the plane is I plant a tree right there.
Yeah, right there inside the
door. In the ashtray that's still in the seat divider.
But this is one of those, depending on what story you want to tell about climate change or how you feel emotionally about climate change, one of the pieces of evidence that you can point to, and a great many people do, is that the oceans are ailing, and jellyfish are exploiting that.
Jellyfish are not ailing.
Jellyfish are not ailing. They're
we've
thriving.
We've bleached all the coral, and we've overfished all the fish, and the jellyfish think they can get away unscathed.
So this is,
I hate those guys.
I know, and this is one of those things where... if you look at the ocean as an ecosystem, we are overfishing it often. And so in the case of just the fish alone, fish are a major predator of jellyfish.
They're like Chinese people. They'll eat jellyfish.
They love jellyfish as well as do turtles and whales even, you know, they'll gobble up a bunch of jellyfish, but fish also, you know, and a wide variety of fish will eat jellyfish.
It doesn't bother them that it has fish in the name. They're like, am I eating a fellow? Is this?
Haven't you ever seen that graphic where it's a little fish being eaten by
It's true. Fish are never trouble. Like, I always get very annoyed when I see Daffy Duck eating a drumstick, and I'm like, put that down,
my
friend.
How often do you see that? That seems like a pretty grisly graphic.
Well, I have a tattoo of Daffy Duck eating a drumstick my inner thigh.
Yeah. I mean, even...
It was a mistake. Why did I do that when I hate it so much?
Like, a beak is a terrible instrument to use to eat chicken.
Sometimes they show teeth. Duck. Sometimes he'll briefly have teeth, and I'm like, well, he shouldn't have teeth.
Yes, I've seen that. A big row of pearly whites. Daffy, you nut. But also, fish like... herring and sardines are competitors of jellyfish for eating zooplankton.
Oh.
So when we harvest
those die out.
Those fish, we're also removing competitors for what jellyfish love. But additionally, when we send a bunch of fertilizer and so forth into the oceans that create algal blooms,
right.
Those algal blooms are A, food for jellyfish. B, they occlude the water so that fish that hunt with their eyes can no longer see.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Can I just say, can I request that you go, and three, because I love that joke.
And three.
Love it.
Fish also can't survive in the low oxygen environment of the sort of shallows, the warmed shallows full of algae, and jellyfish have no problem living in warm, oxygen-deprived environments.
And they don't have eyes, so they don't care if
they don't
can
have
see.
Eyes. And so in all these ways, jellyfish are exemplars of a kind of life form that is filling all the niches as a result of taking away their predators, taking away their competitors, and creating environments.
Creating a utopia for them.
Yeah, where other, where their competitors and predators can't survive.
I'm not somebody who flies too much and puts fossil fuels in the air. Somebody, I love the earth so much, I'm making it better for jellyfish.
Yes, exactly. The problem with the jellyfish taking over
is that they're awful.
They're
little gross, stingy, slimy things that no one wants. Sorry to all the jellyfish descendants listening right now.
In 2009, Anthony Richardson, a researcher, wrote a paper in conjunction with some other, you know, co-authored by several other scientists, speculating that, you know, it was kind of one of these environmental doom scenarios where the jellyfish biomass, and again, 95% water, so the biomass of any one jellyfish, pretty small.
Right.
But the
wait, when you count biomass, you don't count bodily water?
Well, I don't know. Do you?
If I was counting my biomass, I think I should stop doing that. I should be like, yeah, I weigh 38 pounds if you don't count the water.
So I guess, yes, right? I mean,
I don't know.
Really interesting. Well, I mean, I don't want to jump ahead, but yeah, I guess.
It would really be hard on the less juicy, like insects are getting undercounted.
Yeah. Well, if about
overcounted.
Do you count the jellyfish when you take it out of the water, or do you count the jellyfish 2 days later?
You wring it out like a towel. That's what I'll do. I'll take it out of the water, I'll wring it out like a towel, and then I'll weigh it.
I guess because it seems really hard to believe that biomass would not include the water when making this statement, which is that the biomass of jellyfish is going to exceed the biomass of other sea life.
Of all other sea life combined.
Well, certainly of fish.
Wow.
Sea life. This is Anthony Richardson's premise in his academic paper called Jellyfish Joyride.
I was hoping it would be called like Jellapocalypse or
Jellapocalypse. There actually is coined a term, Jellapocalypse.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Jellapocalypse, yeah. Now.
And that term was kind of coined by scientists a few years later.
Because Joyride makes it seem fun, like,
right.
This is awesome.
Well, it's fun for the jellyfish.
There's going to be so many sweet jellyfish.
But there was then quite a bit of controversy about that because, like a lot of climate change prognostication, and like a lot of disaster-oriented prognostication, it requires that everything go in a cascading series of right. Bad news.
You're assuming some kind of exponential spike at some
point. Yeah, and we've talked so much on this show about different instances where people said, well, this is inevitable, and it's going to result in mass starvation, dogs and cats sleeping together, and what ends up happening is that some one factor doesn't break that way, and everything kind of putters along as it has been. So there was quite a bit of pushback from the larger oceanographic research community saying
about jellyfish panic.
There's not going to be a jellapocalypse necessarily, and here's where I don't want to step into climate change denialism too much, but a lot of that is kind of based around the idea that all of this global warming and so forth is just natural cycles. It comes and goes, and this isn't the man-made catastrophe we all fear, although I think all the science points to the fact that it is.
Yeah.
But in this case, there's lots of evidence that jellyfish blooms come in cycles. There's research, there are reports back to the 18th century.
Oh, wow.
Of
like mariners seeing crazy.
Yeah, and people on the shore just saying, like, well, the harbor is clogged with
jellyfish. Here's one of those jellyfish tides that great grandpa talked about.
And in the 20th century, in 1920, in 1958, in 1995, they were big years for jellyfish everywhere, and then they went away. But since 2002, it seems that every year, there's a jellyfish problem.
This is like, what was it called on Usenet? Permanent September or whatever?
Yeah, right, right. And it is, you know, and that's the way climate change works, right? It's like, yeah.
This used to be a 100-year storm.
There's always been a hurricane, but this year we had 11 of them.
Yeah.
And jellyfish blooms appear all around the world, in the Mediterranean, the Black Sea, the Yellow Sea, the Gulf of Mexico. They are a global phenomenon, and there are so many kinds of jellyfish. There are stinging jellyfish, terrible stinging jellyfish, that are the size of peppercorns.
Yeah, I've seen those little tiny ones where, and they look like you shrunk a full size one because they have all the detail and, you know, the little fibers and everything of the big ones. But how they get so tiny?
How are they so tiny? How did they get so high?
Yeah,
he talks like an ordinary guy. No. Imagine being swimming and being like viciously stung by tiny peppercorns.
You can't see them.
You're just like, what the hell is happening? Like no-see-ums.
Bees, like gnats, exactly. Like bees that you can't hear buzz or see sting, but
awful
because they're just transparent.
But in Japan, there are jellyfish that weigh up to 600 pounds.
No.
Yes, and are over 6 feet in diameter.
Like a satellite dish.
Yeah, they're called Nemura jellyfish. And at one point recently, a fishing boat in Japan was pulling in their nets, and they were so full of these enormous Nemura jellyfish that it actually capsized the fishing trawler.
I'm looking at one of these now, and yeah, it's bigger than the frogman photographing it.
Yes.
It looks like a little house he could go in if he were so inclined, although I wouldn't recommend it.
No, and they are...
When I see a jellyfish, can I just say this? When I see a jellyfish, it just makes me angry at, like... low-budget science fiction TV shows where they just put, like, weird eyebrows on somebody and say he's an alien. Because even on Earth, like, evolution can produce that.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way we're going to go into space and see just, like just some white actress from the Valley, but they've put, like, creases on her forehead.
Right.
Like, aliens are going to be weird.
Well, and I think it was just that Star Trek had a small budget and all of their effects were made out of toilet paper tubes.
Yeah, I'm not mad at Star Trek. I'm mad at capitalism for not giving them better money. So I got,
yeah,
because I want jellyfish.
It's capitalism again. Well, you know, the movie Arrival did a pretty good job of saying, no, aliens are actually squid. Let's call them squid.
With CG, you can really push the, you will not understand how this civilization or species works.
Yeah, but even then they just... kind of clouded them, like fogged them out, and all you could see was their tentacles and their suckers. You never saw the whole animal.
They had a weird number of limbs, right? They were like heptapods. Yeah. They had like a kind of symmetry we don't have on Earth somehow. They had seven-sided symmetry.
I guess seven-sided symmetry. That's kind of like my seven-sided lighthouse made of dreams.
Yeah, you want a heptapod made of dreams.
The thing about Arrival is that it stars Amy Adams, who's really up there in my list of contemporary actors whose career I follow with great avidity.
It's also, there's a Seattle connection. That author, Ted Chiang, I just wandered into a bookstore in Ravenna one day at lunch, and he was doing a reading.
Oh.
And I'm like, you just wrote the biggest movie in America last month, and here you are.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful living in a big city?
Nice guy.
Where you're like, oh, look at this. Did you stay for the reading?
I felt guilty sitting late,
but
I later saw him at a party and said, that was cool that you did a reading at lunch. And in New York, you know, you'd see, you know, there'd be 1,000 of those. In Seattle, once a year, you have a weird encounter like that.
But you happened to be invited to a party where he was a guest.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Vacation humble brag. Uruguay.
Well, I was just humble bragging about my getting invited to a party where there was a science. That's not a great humble brag. A science fiction author came up to me at a buffet. Wow. Boy, what's it like to live that life, Ken?
There are so many futurelings right now who are like, actually, that would be really rad.
That would be awesome. I have a list of questions for him.
The thing about jellyfish is they are super big and super small and super everything else because they are 500 million years old.
Oh.
Jellyfish are older than everything. And
older than your laptop.
They're really old, and they reproduce a great variety of ways. Some of them reproduce sexually, which is part of why I vacation in Indonesia. And a lot of them, some produce by cloning. Some of them are capable of, when they're hurt, they actually can revert to an earlier, they can go back to being a polyp.
That's so crazy.
And then
Think about the diversity of land life on Earth that is all just basically the exact same kind of vanilla sex, sexual reproduction.
Yeah.
Same two positions, probably, like birds, swordfish, iguanas, monkeys, everybody's just basically doing the same kind of sex.
And weirdly, humans are the only ones that look at each other. like look into my eyes. Birds are not.
Porn changed all that for birds, I think.
Yeah.
It was terrible. But jellyfish all look like jellyfish, but they're doing every crazy thing under the sun.
Yeah,
they're
freaks. That's just bipedalism
Well, it just shows that our sense of our I think of jellyfish as like one animal in the same way that an eagle is one animal.
Mm-hmm.
And no, jellyfish have broader kind of higher up the evolutionary change diversity than like all land fauna, period.
Yeah, they're bonkers. You know, they're related to coral.
Oh, that makes sense.
Bonkers. And, you know, in jellyfish...
Coral has skeleton and jellyfish doesn't, huh?
Jellyfish does not have skeleton.
A coral is a jellyfish that wanted to settle down.
Yeah, a coral was a jellyfish that made some schmutz that ended up sticking to rocks. But jellyfish are really good, so they spew out their little polyps, and they can lay dormant for a long time. And then... suddenly, you know, spawn when the time is right.
I'm so glad that doesn't happen to humans.
You're telling me. And because of cloning, you can make an argument that they live forever.
Yeah.
Right? That it's just like...
Is that true? Like there's genetically a jellyfish around that was basically that jellyfish.
500 million years ago, gosh. I think. But they also, you know, they love warm water, but they also love to... the polyps attach themselves to man-made structures, docks, boats... all kinds of, you know, floating crapola. And as we'll see in a second, that makes them somewhat useful too, but it also makes them proliferate. You know, they're just one of a million species that get transported around the world in ballast water. You know, they're just like, they're
ballast water.
Ballast water.
Ballast water is doing all the invasive marine species.
It's what bringing tiger mussels into the Great Lakes, and just ballast water everywhere. Mm. And I don't know why they can't.
Can't they just use milk or something?
I don't know why they can't just filter ballast water. Well, they can. The thing is that it's some jellyfish, and jellyfish polyps are so small, they can't be filtered. But they are, well, we'll see in a second that they also can be used as filters.
Cannot be filtered, but can filter.
That's right. So jellyfish have been a problem for quite a while, right? The Japanese, and I'm talking about like not just back to the 18th century problem, but the fact that jellyfish are recurrent.
Cyclical booms.
And it's a combination of us overfishing different populations of fish, like we,
or underfishing jellyfish. If you're
well, that's right. If we, we fish so much herring and sardines just to grind it up to use it as fish meal, and so the jellyfish are like, look at all this zooplankton that it's is hanging uneaten. Out. But we're also grabbing all the fish that would eat them. We're seeing then jellyfish blooms, which is millions of jellyfish actually out competing fish, and they like to eat fish eggs, and they basically smother fish. And so fisheries that have been overfished are now finding that there's no fish because jellyfish are,
this is terrifying. Jellyfish are sounding undefeatable.
Well, that's what Anthony Richardson was saying. Although, you know, again,
worst case scenario.
It's arguable how much of this is, I won't wade into that argument. But now jellyfish are also really affecting human aquaculture and also the many ways that we use seawater. So jellyfish have in recent years clogged up the water intakes in nuclear plants in Japan, Israel, in Florida, all around the world.
So any place that's going to use seawater,
yep.
Like in a future desalination world, we're going to have to like get jellyfish out of our drink.
That has actually happened. Desalination plants in Israel have already shut down because the intake was clogged with
jellyfish. Are they like, just shut up, it's extra collagen.
Well, so the uses of jellyfish, we'll see in a second. I've got in 2007, in Ireland, a salmon farming industry that was farming, you know, basically all the salmon for Ireland and an export commodity was surrounded by this 10 square mile bloom of jellyfish that basically just ate them all,
all the salmon?
Completely decimated either by suffocating or, you know, I'm not sure that jellyfish could eat a salmon, but
they could somehow they ate their food or they...
Yeah, they killed 100,000 salmon and put the Irish salmon farming industry back a while enough that they had to essentially restart it. So this question of what now to do with jellyfish is...
Are you leading up to some terrible cry for jellyfish genocide? You've really got me against them, and I'll just accept whatever remedy you propose, John.
Ken, I know you love a Christmas pickle.
It's my favorite thing about the holidays.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, there are many good traditions, but boy, playing hide the pickle.
Hide the pickle.
Is really what makes Christmas jolly to
yeah.
me.
Yeah. You don't want a sickle.
It's already festive. Mm-hmm. For various reasons, including the birth of our Lord, but...
It also is green, which is one of the two Christmas colors.
The Christmas pickle is what makes it jolly, in my opinion.
Why are Christmas colors green and red? Is it just holly? A holly has green and red, and it's a Christmassy kind of thing?
That's the only thing that's still green and red in winter?
Yeah.
Probably.
Well, the reason I wanted to ask about the pickle is that we have a new Omnibus t-shirt after many months of no new Omnibus t-shirts. And in the infinite wisdom of the Omnibus Brain Trust, it is a Christmas-themed t-shirt design with a Christmas pickle.
I feel like some people listening are listening with someone who likes Omnibus more than them.
Mm.
And what you should do, if you don't have a gift idea for him, her, or them, is you should consider... They love Omnibus so much.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be opening it on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Why not give them a holiday-themed Omnibus shirt?
I think there are people listening to the show who are headed back to Christmas with their families, and they're kind of dreading it because their families are maybe differently politically aligned from them, and there's going to be uncomfortable conversations around the dining room table where some uncle says something weird.
He's going to pull off your face mask and try to choke you with it.
Yeah, or whatever. Maybe you're the one that doesn't believe in face masks, but you love Omnibus.
I like how you want to make sure those weirdos buy
the
shirt.
You know, I just feel like everybody's on their own weird trip these days. And what you could do is give every one of your relatives that you're kind of estranged from an Omnibus pickle t-shirt as a form of like weird assertion. It'd be like going back home and your mom gives you a bunch of Christmas presents that have to do with Christmas, that are like Christian, that have like Christian themes. You can give everybody an Omnibus pickle shirt.
It's irreligious, but slightly festive.
It's festive.
It's plausibly Christmassy without being overtly theological.
So your uncles are like opening this and they're like, you know, already the kids have all gotten pickle shirts. And then your uncle opens it and is like, also a pickle shirt for me. Oh, thanks.
Did you get a discount?
And you're going to just be loving it. You're going to be rolling, totally gassing because you have done it again. You've done it again.
This is from our friends at Side Deal. And I think I said Soft Deal in a previous ad. And they were justly annoyed. Yeah. Soft Deal is
no,
it. Don't go to that website.
Side Deal.
Our friends at Side Deal have designed a cool shirt. And you can take advantage. You can go to, should I give the long URL?
Yeah.
Sidedeal.com/deals/omnibus-holiday-TEE. Or the easier way to do this is to go to omnibusproject.com/store, and you'll see a link to the pickle shirt.
Love it. Love it. A link to the pickle shirt. I've been wanting to say that for years, and now finally an opportunity. But seriously, this is a t-shirt and, you know, and other items, sweatshirts, presumably ice skates, all the stuff you find at a podcast store.
There is lots of stuff at omnibusproject.com/store, but don't miss the Christmas shirt, because it's a limited time only. You need to order by November 30th, or it won't get here in time for Santa to bring it.
Think how hilarious it's going to be to wear this in July. People are like, what are you doing with the Christmas colors on your shirt? And you're like, ah, Omnibus, Christmas pickle.
Should we sell a red, white, and blue patriotic t-shirt you could wear in December?
There's no season of patriotism.
Is 4th of July in December as funny as Christmas in July?
No, because every day you should be celebrating your freedoms here in America. Jellyfish and the Jellyfish Bloom Experience, which is a great band name, the Jellyfish Bloom Experience. It has generated more academic papers in the last decade than... Well, I mean, talk about it. What generates academic papers. I have no idea. Probably diversity, equity, and inclusion has generated 1,000 more academic papers than Jellyfish.
But there's a sense of urgency,
yes,
to the Jellyfish question.
And a lot of smart people in the marine sciences who have some hot takes on Jellyfish, and they like to argue with one another. So there have been a lot of people, and the thing is, there are a lot of Jellyfish stans, people in the sciences who love Jellyfish and think they're marvelous. Those people...
But like, I'm sure they can't defend their current ecological problems.
Well, they do by saying, we understand so little about the oceans that this may be a human-centric focus where we're saying, oh no, we've done this terrible thing, but all we're seeing is jellyfish washing up on the beaches and fewer fish in our fishing nets and more 600-pound Japanese jellyfish. But we don't know the complex role that jellyfish play in the ocean, whether jellyfish die and in these mass blooms and fertilize the sea. We can't know the cycle.
What kind of joyride are we on?
Exactly. What kind of joyride are they on, and what kind of joyride are we on? And is this an example of us panicking, killing 100 billion jellyfish as part of some eradication program, and then all of a sudden the herring population spikes and the globe, you know, and then we're talking about how the herring are killing everything. So there's that argument within the science.
What would you call that? Herring hayride, maybe?
The herring hayride. The herring hell ride.
There you go.
So there, you know, there are people pushing back, but it seems so unlikely, both in the diversity of jellyfish and also the equity of jellyfish, but the many ways that jellyfish reproduce, how you could farm jellyfish up the wazoo. It seems like you'd have a hard time really overfishing them, but then that's what we used to say about the whales.
It's true.
Also the tuna.
Also the passenger pigeon.
The passenger, well, we didn't really, yeah, we were killing them. We weren't really eating them. And that's one of the main ways that it's suggested that jellyfish, the jellyfish problem be addressed, is by making jellyfish a food stuff.
And are people working on this like in labs, trying to make burgers out of jellyfish?
Well, they're trying first to emulate Asian cultures who are already using jellyfish in food, and to say like, yeah, sure, this is, well, it's like everything. It's like normalizing capybara as a foodstuff.
Right.
How do you get people in Boston to agree to eat jellyfish? And so far, as you can imagine, it's been an uphill battle.
But think how fast that can change. Remember how, like, when we were kids, eating seaweed seemed like some kind of a space station solution?
Yes.
And now, like, now you're like, well, how much seaweed do you want on your poke? Which kind of seaweed do you want?
There's a scientist by the name of Rob Condon who started the Jellyfish Database Initiative, or JEDI.
Oh, look at that.
Isn't that cute? And Rob Condon, part of the JEDI initiative, is to, although I just said Jellyfish Database Initiative.
Right. It's not the JDI, it's not the Jedi Initiative.
Is to try to measure what exactly the biomass of jellyfish is to determine whether or not there really is a jellyfish problem. And the problem with that, of course, is that...
getting them to stand on the scale.
Well, that, and also, what is their biomass? It's 95% right. water. But also, jellyfish travel just deep enough, just, you know, they're underwater just enough that they're impossible to detect by satellite. It's very hard to survey them. Huh. And also, they're transparent.
Right.
So any mass scale global... you know, survey.
It's got to start by paintballing all the jellyfish.
Right.
Somehow.
And, you know, and a lot of them, I mean, jellyfish do glow under ultraviolet light, but it's hard to
I've seen that in aquariums, yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. One of the solutions seems to be that if we can just popularize home aquariums full of glowing jellyfish, maybe we can get a billion people to...
I don't see how that would... That can't be... That's got to be a drop in the bucket,
yeah,
jellyfish-wise. Yeah. There was a Vietnamese bar downtown that used to have a jellyfish tank or room or ring or something, and we would always go try to sit in the room that had all the jellyfish, and then I think one day all the jellyfish died.
Yeah.
And then they never actually refilled the tank.
They're very sensitive. They're very delicate, right? I mean, a jellyfish can even be hurt... It can be hurt by any... by running into any object. It can even just be hurt by hitting the glass of a aquarium.
What?
So a proper jellyfish aquarium has constant motion of water.
Right.
That not only keeps them floating, because they require the water moving around to stay aloft, but also keeps them from hitting the glass and just kind of cycles them.
Splat.
You know, they're not, as far as we know... they're not sentient because they have no brains or nervous systems.
It's hard to be sentient when you don't have a nervous system.
Although that's very human-centric. We don't know. We don't know, Ken, if this is tiny little...
Can consciousness arise from a complexity of, who knows,
yeah,
skin electricity?
Of collagens?
Are they thinking, are they talking when they zap me? Hey, Ken.
I hate you.
Cut that out.
And so in addition to just being chopped into noodles and being eaten, as fish, there are other, you know, there are a lot of attempts to make jellyfish useful as a sort of industrial scale source of...
like make insulation or cattle feed out of them?
Yeah, stuff, right? There is a lot of goop in them and they're not... it's not fat. There's very little fat.
They work out.
It is protein-ish.
What could you do with such goop?
It's very salty. And so people are trying to figure out what to do with it. And it turns out that, you know, there are... The global fisheries capture about 112 million tons of fish globally. The idea of jellyfish representing, you know, a catch of 112, you know, in order, if we thought of them as direct competitors of fish. In Georgia, there is a jellyfish industry exporting jellyfish to Asia, although you would think Asia would be able to produce enough jellyfish to support its own
market.
The
ocean you're crossing to ship stuff there is surely full of delicious jellyfish.
But I think Georgian, like Gulf of Mexico jellyfish are super delicious jellyfish. Mm. Jellyfish now represent, by volume, the largest seafood commodity in the state of Georgia.
Really?
Yeah. Which we know has... on the Gulf of Mexico, only a tiny little bit touching there. So maybe the seafood, I mean, maybe Georgia doesn't have as big a seafood.
Like there's a reason why it doesn't have a South Carolina like fishing
Florida
fleet.
Does. Although Georgia has an ocean, like an Atlantic coastline.
It only has Atlantic. It does not. It's not on the Gulf.
Doesn't it have a little Gulf?
It's got a little bit on the Atlantic. Florida keeps it from the Gulf. and I guess whatever's next to it.
Oh, that's Alabama. Right. That's right. It cuts it off. Right.
It's Alabama that has
has the little key there by Mobile.
Is this how we find out you're from a parallel timeline where Georgia and Alabama became one state during the Second Civil War?
You know, the problem with my knowledge of the geography of the South is that I don't care. No, it's that I'm often down there, or I was often down there playing shows, but it may surprise you to know that the long winters did not really blow up on the Biloxi, Mobile, Tallahassee circuit.
No matter how hard you tried.
And it's
guys, if we could just break in Jackson, Mississippi.
I think it's because my booking agent for many years lived in Mississippi.
Oh, really?
And he felt like, nah, it's all just a indie rock dead zone down there. I was like, I know all kinds of indie rock bands that are playing in Tallahassee. And he said, no, you don't. And it's hard to argue with your booking agent. He was like, we'll play Atlanta. And if people in Jacksonville want to see you, they'll make the drive. Don't worry. And I was like, well, people in Orlando aren't. He's like, nah, there's nobody, you know, Boston's not a big college town.
Yeah, exactly. Just thinking that.
Jerk hole. But yeah, so anyway, I have that problem of not remembering that Florida cuts all those countries.
And of not liking your booking agent.
No, I love him. I love him to death. It's just that he had strong opinions about weird things. And he lived in Oxford, Mississippi, and he was a booking agent in Oxford, Mississippi, never booked us in Oxford.
That's a college town.
It's like, come on, are you kidding me? I'm the preppiest prep guy since before Vampire Weekend.
You think just because it has Oxford in the name that they should like
pretty prep sure it's one of those southern preppy towns where they're, you think like, oh, preppies, they all live in New England. No.
What if it's all Faulkner nerds who just love Southern Gothic and incest?
I'm into that too.
Either way. Yeah, you can play some of your Southern Gothic incest tunes.
But what it turns out is that the collagen in Jellyfish sort of is a great replacement for collagen in pig and beef bones.
Mm.
So all of the uses of collagen, both in like in terms of making Jell-O pudding and also in medicine.
Injecting them into Jennifer Coolidge
I was at the orthopedist and I was like, well, what can you inject into a knee to make it stop hurting so much? And he was like, nothing.
Boo.
But then other people on the internet who are manifesting happier lives tell me, no, you can inject these
anything.
Things. Yeah.
I inject Vienna sausages into my knee every afternoon.
Sure, Diet Dr. Pepper. And it relieved all my pain. But there are now whole industries popping up trying to see, like, here's all this stuff that all this goop that nobody wants.
Got a surplus.
Kind of easy to harvest in the sense that you can throw a trawler net in that's really designed just to scrape the jellyfish off the, you know, in the top 35 feet of water and let the fish go free. I'm not any kind of trawler net expert, and I've got my doubts knowing as an Alaskan and Seattleite what I do about trawling nets, but it does seem like, oh, we could probably capture a bunch of jellyfish this way. Now, what would we do with them?
They're not as good at escaping as a fish is.
That's right.
They're not going to make a plan.
That's right. It turns out that jellyfish dried and reduced down to, you know, chips, basically,
okay,
work really great as an organic fertilizer. Right. This is one of the big problems with organic food is that fertilizers and pest reducers made of chemicals are not organic. But you can take, this is one of these carbon footprint problems, like, is organic food more important to us, the lack of chemicals, than
right,
processing and transporting a billion tons of jellyfish chips to use as fertilizer? But it does perform as well or better than industrial fertilizers. So that is increasingly talked about as a use case for billion jellyfish. But what's most interesting is that recently scientists have identified what's called green fluorescent protein.
GFP?
GFP, which is you know, which accounts for the fluorescence. And it's part...
That's something in a jellyfish's body?
Yeah. And what it does is it both generates energy from ultraviolet light, but it also attaches to cells in a way that allows... It's like putting dye into the body in order to see...
Like a marker.
A marker in order to watch where certain proteins go. But GFP can actually bond to cells in a way that allow a kind of new ability to track cells in the body.
We could cure cancer with jellyfish light-up goop?
So there's tons of that kind of research just happening. And in fact, the scientists that discovered GFP and its practicability in the body won the Nobel Prize in 2008.
Oh, wow.
Because GFP represents such an innovation in medicine.
And is it for that? Is it like fighting cancers and stuff? Is it tracking where the wrong cells are going in
it
your body?
It can go into the brain and show a level of detail that no other kind of marker can do. So I think it's being used in all manner of science where you want to see what.
It's probably being used as an evidence for the existence of God.
Let's hope.
Are you kidding that like this green goop and jelly tentacle jellyfish just happens to like allow better brain imaging?
Well, what if
it's all?
What if it decides that your emotions actually are in your heart? what are you going to do then, science?
What if you squirt enough jellyfish goo into somebody's head that they start to actually think like a jellyfish?
Right.
And you create the first transhuman solenterate.
What if they start, what if they then immediately go out and start killing herring because they don't want competition for zooplankton?
Grandpa's cancer went away, but he keeps stinging me and eating zooplankton.
But the thing is that is a utility or a use for certain kinds of jellyfish processing this green fluorescent protein, but it's not going to presumably be at an industrial scale to deal with billions of.
We're still going to have to murder 1 billion jellyfish even after we cure brain cancer.
There's a company in Sweden that actually is working on generating electricity by using GFP as a GFP's ultraviolet light generating properties
as a battery somehow.
In a power cell. Yeah. And that seems like a ways off, but I mean, I'm not sure. Again, 95% water, you could just probably take these jellyfish and truck them somewhere because, you know, keep them in a bath and then what, squeeze them like a Boda bag?
Take them to that little pond in Death Valley where only that one kind of fish lives.
Right. They'll outcompete the fish really fast.
Oh, that's true.
Or maybe the fish will demonstrate like a formerly unknown hunger for jellyfish protein.
We'll find out. Like, we'll find out. That's the one species that can control them. We'll have to like get the whole pupfish to live in every ocean to
suddenly
keep the jellyfish down.
Pupfish are 9 feet long, and you're like, what do we do now?
Eat delicious pupfish. That's what we do.
But another crazy thing that scientists have recently discovered in trying to find a use for jellyfish is that jellyfish mucus.
I don't know how this sentence is going to end, but I'm in love with it already.
Has filtering powers of its own that increasingly, this is another super panic, is that microplastics are invading the universe and in the ocean and now showing up in the fish.
Mess with the biology of everything.
So microplastics are another, I'm sure there are lots of academic papers about how microplastics are going to ruin the globe.
But on the plus side, they did make shampoo very slippery for many years.
That's right.
And that's important.
And the problem with microplastics is that sewage treatment plants do not have the filtering capacity to filter things as small as microplastic
particles.
They're
like the jellyfish of the shampoo world.
And it makes you wonder, well, that means that tiny pieces of poop are also getting through.
Yeah. But any piece of poop that size and texture will also get through.
Yeah, but that is a, you know, that was always something that you knew.
You're just used to everything having a tiny bit of poop.
Yeah, right.
You just want it to be very tiny.
Well, and it's
that's the bargain you make with society.
I did that tour of the sewage treatment plant here, and the guy was like, well, I'm not going to give you a glass of water that comes right out of the sewage treatment plant, but we put the water then, we mix it with other water.
If I was that guy, I would just drink a glass on every tour.
But a glass that you get from another jar. I feel like here in Washington, we take our mostly treated water and just dump it in the ocean and let the fish deal with it. If you're in Nevada, there also have to be sewage treatment plants, right? Because people are also pooping in Nevada. But where does that water go? Probably into the Colorado River.
No, it's all into that pond in front of the Bellagio. Fountain light show.
Yeah,
it's
40%
poop.
But the microplastics and poop particles make the light really.
Yeah, they don't even have to shoot light on those. It's different colors every second on purpose.
Well, apparently jellyfish mucus will filter microplastics.
It's a super mucus.
So it's able to have this sort of industrial function in sewage treatment plants. And if it can filter microplastics in sewage treatment plants, surely we can use it in other like micro filtering applications that we're really on the cutting edge of using jellyfish for other things.
Soon the fan in your laptop will be powered by jellyfish mucus. And your QR codes will all be coated in glowing jellyfish protein. Our people will use every part of the jellyfish.
That's right. I mean, jellyfish are really good as eye drops.
Is that true?
Yeah, they have this certain property that really moistens the eye.
I mean, then you got jellyfish floating around your field of vision, I guess. But
well, hopefully those jellyfish have not also filtered microplastics.
This is like an Ursula the Sea Witch thing. Can you imagine a world where everybody's just squeezing jellyfish into their eyes?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, you know, the salt in jellyfish water probably isn't, you know, it's not.
Yeah.
It's fine for the eyes once it's cleaned.
I just think the aesthetics of it are going to be weird.
Yeah.
My purse is a big jellyfish and I reach in and I pull out my water bottle, which is also a jellyfish. And the filter in it is powered by jellyfish mucus.
I wonder if your little little eyedrop dropper could be shaped like a little plastic jellyfish. How Japanese would that be? Like, blip, 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 blip.
Don't make it out of plastic, though. That's just part
make
of the
it out of jellyfish.
Part of the problem. Yeah, make it out of jellyfish collagen.
Jellyfish have actually played a role in space exploration.
What?
In the following way. I mean, this was recognized as early as 1991. NASA started sending jellyfish into space because jellyfish maintain their balance. They understand gravity, although understand is maybe not the word. But jellyfish relate to gravity by virtue of the calcium crystals in their body that are oriented to the pull of gravity, and that allows the jellyfish to know which way is up.
Okay.
And so jellyfish were taken into space and then bred in space, or they, you know, they spewed their baby jellyfish.
Ew. Don't say ever say spewed baby jelly.
Spewed baby
even
jelly.
Even if fish comes after.
And the jellyfish that were born in space and grew up in space also had calcium crystals that were used to that grew in relation to no gravity, and they looked normal. But when those baby jellyfish then were returned to Earth, think about NASA and all the crazy things they do. They brought space-borne jellyfish back to Earth, and those jellyfish could not swim because, although they looked normal, their calcium crystals...
They were used to zero-G life.
Yeah, and their calcium crystals could not reorient to Earth. And so those jellyfish were presumably swimming willy-nilly and couldn't feast on zooplankton. And, you know, leave it to NASA to bring back weird space jellyfish, which they probably then flushed into the Colorado River.
Yeah, they're
themselves.
Not an improvement. NASA should be making better mutated space jellyfish. Instead, they're just bringing back dopey, drunk space jellyfish. You can't swim around.
But the reason they did this is that human beings – our inner ear that keeps us oriented to gravity also, yeah. It's calcium crystals
right.
in the inner ear. And so NASA did this study to see, well, what if people who are born in space return to Earth? And one of the big problems is that if this is true of calcium crystals, that they orient to the gravity they're born into, those people would return to Earth and have terrible vertigo, just be stumbling around. It would be a nightmare to return to Earth. And so...
So we should send Elon Musk to Mars.
Well, but he's already oriented to Earth.
Oh, perfect. He'll be stumbling around everywhere.
Well, and I don't know whether what that means is that we have to build 2001 A Space Odyssey rotating, like, gravity-producing space stations.
Fake gravity, yeah.
It just in order to be accustomed, or maybe people that are born in space, stay in space. Hey.
Two kinds of people.
Hey, born in space. Stay in space.
We'll zoom you later, but you can't come back. I have long thought that the microgravity is going to be the deal killer.
Oh, yeah?
On Mars.
Oh, because the bone density.
Bone density and all that stuff. Yeah. Like, we're all just going to turn into the jelly, the human jellyfish from WALL-E if we don't have a spinning ship or some kind of fake gravity.
Well, and what's amazing is replicants are able to watch the sea beams glitter over Tannhauser Gate, but then they can return to Earth without these problems.
You can come back from the off-world colonies?
Yes.
That's a relief.
You know, I've been to two doctors in the last 2 weeks who have done, one of them did a PET scan of my head, and one of them did a MRI of my leg, and both of them said, you have really amazing bone density that has protected you against grave injury and degradation.
What a nice compliment.
In ways that puts you way up on the top level of the belt curve.
You have lived in such a way that you would be dead if you had my skeleton.
They both have said, it's a miracle that you have not suffered way worse. But because of your, and they both have showed me on the thing, look at how black your bones are. Like, normally at your age, these would be white, and we can't account for it. So it's just, did you know? So what I discovered, I went to the orthopedist, and he showed me this MRI, and he's like, you have no ACL, and have not had one for decades.
That's a thing? People can just not have an ACL?
Well, I said, huh? I go skiing. He's like, you know, you broke your ACL. I'm not going to say how long ago, but there's no even sign of an ACL in your body. And the only reason you you're just doop-doo-doo-doo-doo is that your bones and other muscles and your, what is the stuff? Cartilage are so thick that you're just, he did the test before he took the MRI and he's like, well, your ACL seems fine. So it must be some meniscus thing. And then he's like, I just have never, I don't know. He said, I wish I could go back 10 minutes and not tell you that you don't have an ACL, because now you're going to be weird about it.
Now you'll worry.
But, and I'm just like, whoa, I didn't realize. That's why I can't sit in airline seats, because my bone density, you are my density.
Someday we're going to be strapping jellyfish into people's tendons and cartilage and whatnot.
Won't work. Maybe. Well, maybe. Who knows? Maybe if I put a jellyfish in my knee, a little jellyfish?
It's kind of meniscus shaped.
Yeah, might be, actually.
What a fun joyride that would be for that little jellyfish.
The greatest piece of news that I just discovered in my long history of being curious about applications for jellyfish.
your decades of study.
Is that a company, and it's an astonishing insight, a company recently said, wait a minute, one of the big environmental issues, one of the things that fills up landfills, that's a terrible, terrible product. Can you guess what it is?
Oh, is it going to be bubble wrap?
No.
Oh, I was thinking jellyfish for bubble wrap. I give up. Styrofoam.
Diapers.
Oh, right.
You remember all the pressure when your kids were born, like, don't use disposable diapers.
We tried for like a week.
So did we.
And we were like, this is a nightmare.
Where it's like, oh, cloth diapers, and you have a service, and you have a giant bin of the stinkiest things.
Have a diaper genie.
Yeah, just, it's so, and it's so sad to be a liberal parent who who's like, we're not going to, oh, we spent weeks, like, we're not going to be one of those disposable diaper parents.
We were very pleased with ourselves until we actually had to try it.
Yeah, so awful. But jellyfish are able to be 95% water. They're incredibly absorbent and don't, like, they somehow are able to keep water in contained and...
Because of their shape and size, it's very easy to imagine taking a medium-sized jellyfish and just strapping it onto a newborn's bottom and tying the tentacles.
I mean, without the stingers, but so this company is turning jellyfish into a kind of hydro mash that...
Turning jellyfish into diapers, one tentacle at a time.
That's right, since 2023.
That's a real dystopian company.
So I mean, I think that that may be... If you think about all the disposable diapers globally that are basically a, you know, like a, talk about a dystopian industry. The landfill's just full of never degrading microplastic disposable diapers, but instead out of jellyfish.
They just melt away when you're done with them.
It solves all the globe's problems.
Single use diapers, and then you wash it off real good and you put it on your pho. And that concludes Jellyfish Blooms. Entry 671.PS10425, certificate number 23757, in the omnibus. Hey there, jellyfish descendants. Our land-based life didn't last, but at least by killing off all the fish and the whales, we really helped you guys evolve sentience faster.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm still rooting for the fact that you're really smart and we just don't understand you.
Thanks for all the mucus. So long and thanks for all the mucus, jellyfish people. We had social media. I hope you don't. You can find us at Ken Jennings or at John Roderick or at Omnibus Project on various platforms, which are probably called something different than what they were when we recorded this.
They're called Blork, Blork, Blork.
They're called something else and have more Nazis now, probably. You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. Send physical items.
Let's see. Yeah, what do you got? Here? You got a little bit more mailbag over there, huh?
To P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. MJ sent us a picture from Alderney, the only concentration camp built on British soil. Is that really something to be proud of, MJ? This is it's from an art exhibit of what the night sky looked like over every Nazi concentration camp. Does that mean that Alderney was... Oh, did the Nazis ever get to the Channel Islands?
Yeah.
And they built a camp?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe Britain shouldn't be bragging about its concentration camps. The way in the U.S. you wouldn't be like, welcome to the deserts of Nevada, where we put a bunch of Japanese Americans who
I've been to a couple of Japanese internment camps, and although they're not proud, they certainly are commemorating.
It's good to commemorate them, but this just seemed very celebratory. But now it makes more sense now that I know it's a Nazi camp.
Yeah, the Germans were in the Channel Islands, and... you know, it was, they were there all the way until 1945. It wasn't like the Japanese in the Aleutian Islands where the American army attacked and discovered that the Japanese had all left and they were just attacking like nothing. No, they were like in Guernsey and stuff all the way through the war.
Matt and Larissa and Chad sent us a postcard from their trip to Santa Claus, Indiana, which, as you would imagine, has this jolly Christmas-themed display at its post office.
Say what now? This just seems like a way to scam little kids.
This is better than the Saigon post office because it has a giant Santa Claus in front of it with the zip code on his box.
Indiana.
I mean, his package, not on his... Well, not his package.
Oh, come on.
Not on his parcel.
On his... Oh, no, that doesn't work either. I'm sure in gay culture, parcel is another euphemism.
They say that this is... say, in not many towns can you visit Lincoln's boyhood home and ride a wooden roller coaster in the same day. I would imagine in no other town could you visit Lincoln's boyhood home and ride a roller coaster.
Unless Lincoln was like a military brat and lived in multiple towns in his youth.
Sparky sent us a postcard from up in Adams City, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's an old-timey postcard showing an atomic detonation that was 75 miles away from the Strip, I guess. Back when America still knew how to have a good time. This is from our friend Sparky, who I can't remember is either a truck driver or I claim he's a truck driver. One of those two. is certainly true.
Sparky is a great name for a truck driver.
The truck driver who gave me a ride once when we were out of gas and hitchhiking was named Fuzzy, which is the perfect truck driver name.
That is a good truck driver name. I bet he had a No Lot Lizard sticker on his rig.
And finally, the very best, we always get the best postcards from our cartoonist friend,
David Chelsea.
He says he was planning to draw another omnibus comic on his last plane trip. He often will draw and paint on barf bags for us.
Yeah.
But he forgot his earbuds and had to sit in silence. Instead, he painted this page from a book of watercolor paper postcards that my son's girlfriend was carrying around. Well, good thing she had postcards printed on watercolor paper, because this is a beautiful vision of Luke Spencer and Laura Baldwin from General Hospital.
Wow. So good.
And he's got a lot of complaints about finding the technical pens, I guess the rapidographs or whatever, that he liked. All his underground alternative cartoonist friends of his generation used to use them, but now they're hard to find because drafters don't need them anymore. They're all doing everything on CAD, and so it leaves it's the underground cartoonists who suffer.
Do you think we have enough of those postcards to put them together in a giant poster frame as a kind of like collage, an art thing of its own?
We have a lot of David Chelsea work, enough that I almost think he could like publish a book out of them if he hadn't sent them all to us.
We could publish a book out of them and then we profit.
No, we would credit the artist.
Yeah.
I guess.
Sure.
So when it's Napster, you're like, boo. But when you want to steal David's beautiful soap opera watercolors,
yay.
Hey, why not? Thank you so much, David. Those are lovely. So please send us whatever weird detritus to our P.O. box. Find your like-minded futurelings online. Talk about whatever you guys talk about. Smoots
pop music.
Smoots and elephant adoption. And they would be talking about pop music, but if they were cool to talk about pop music, would they be listening to us?
Whoa. I mean, there are lots of cools listening to us.
Do you think we have more cools or non-cools? Write in and tell us whether you can identify as a cool or a non-cool, and we'll have a face-off.
But these days, don't all the cools identify as non-cool?
But maybe the other way around, too. Like, the non-cools are like,
oh, I'm cool.
Yeah, it's super cool not to know what to do in social situations, because it means I have the next generation of brain.
I'm getting a sense from my daughter that although they all are socially somewhat obligated to describe themselves as nerds, because it's absolutely the cool thing to be, I also get a feeling that maybe actual cools are on their way back. That there are like jocks.
It's got to swing back.
Yeah, and just like,
if nothing else, the jocks can knock everybody else onto the locker room floor.
Yeah, they're just sort of not apologizing once again, and they're like, "Oh, you know what? We're just going to be bullies. What are you going to do about it?" And it's like, "Wow,
it's true. If they figure that out, we're done for.
It's come back around. Amazing."
Oh, and of course, the best way to support the show, if you want to see pictures of David Chelsea's amazing art and our other mailbag stuff.
And if you believe in climate change and also are against bullying.
And if you believe in Santa Claus and his namesake town in Indiana, you can see all that at patreon.com/omnibusproject, where for a tiny amount that you won't even miss from your monthly latte budget.
No, you'll be glad to be rid of it, because mo money, mo problems.
We have found a way to give you less money, and therefore
slightly less, but by the less.
By the what corollary would that be? Who said mo money, mo problems? Puff Daddy?
No. Wasn't it? It predates it's Puff Daddy.
It's older than that?
Pretty sure. Mo money. Let's see. Yeah, Mo Money is a movie from 1992.
Yes,
no, it's by Biggie.
Oh, it's Biggie. That's right. By Biggie's corollary.
Wait, did you say Puff Daddy? Because Diddy is on the Biggie track.
Okay, good.
So you were right all along.
Of all the people that were yelling at us for like 8 seconds there, they were yelling slightly less because I remembered that it was featuring Diddy. Thank goodness. So by Diddy's corollary, you could have less money and therefore fewer problems. Less money, fewer problems. Remember that follow-up track?
Mm-hmm. Fewer money, less problems.
By sending us a negligible amount
of your
budget every month and keeping the lights on here at Omnibus HQ.
Think about how much money some of you, the older ones of you, used to spend on CDs, records, books, tapes.
Now subtract your the $10 you spend on Spotify.
Right, and the Netflix and the Apple TV subscriptions. It's still probably, although you're spending a lot more money on food, because knowing you, Omnibus listeners, you're getting food sent to you.
But well, still, you think they're lazy?
No, it's just
or they're
just like,
bad cooks.
They're early busy. Adopters, and they're like, you know what? We could just have Door Grab bring this to us. But still, yes, give to patreon.com/omnibusproject.
And not to Door Grab, a fictional food delivery place that we just invented.
Future links from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may have been our final word. But if Providence allows, we wish you many goods and cheese and hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.